Good morning and welcome. This is JFK Spotlight on Health. I'm Joel Katz. Brought to you by Hackensack Meridian Health, JFK University Medical Center. Keep getting better. And joining us this week is Dr. Aram Jawad. He's a bariatric, robotic, and general surgeon at JFK University Medical Center in Edison, fellow of American College of Surgeons, and fellow of Society of Metabolic and Bariatric Surgery. Good morning, doctor.
Good morning.
First question, did I get your name right?
Yes, Aram Jawad, that's right.
Got it, Aram Jawad. All right, good. Now we all know that. Are there? I guess we're all done. We pretty much satisfied all the curiosity of anyone listening. Obviously, you're here to talk about bariatric surgery and the like, and obesity, particularly in men, is on the rise. So why are so many men becoming obese, and why are they struggling so much to keep the weight off?
So, that's the key question kind of everybody is trying to answer. And it's a two-prong answer. One is lifestyle, and the other is diet. And that's what pretty much every primary care doctor will tell you. But what I have to tell you is that it's not just lifestyle and diet, but it's also hormones, okay? And it's anatomy. And that's what we have to understand here is that, yes, we live a completely drastic lifestyle than we used to even 100 or 200 years ago, let alone, 30,000 years ago. And our stomachs and digestive system is not really that conducive to the way that we're living today. So what does that mean? Well, we used to eat very low-calorie foods in large quantities. Now we're trying to force all these fad diets and eating high-calorie food in lower quantities. Well, the problem is our stomachs can hold 1.5 liters of food, and that wants to be full. If it's not full, then our body sends hormones to the brain and the rest of the body saying, hey, I'm hungry, cravings, give me more food, fill me up. And if our body isn't satisfied with that and you don't feel that satiety that everybody feels on Thanksgiving or the holiday time where you've eaten so much, you're like, oh, I feel so good. I want to take a nap.
That's a great feeling.
It's a great feeling. But we don't feel that anymore. And instead, everybody's doing keto and paleo and intermittent fasting and killing themselves. And not only are they extremely hungry because their bodies are now going in overdrive, but also their bodies are now lowering their metabolism. Because if your body perceives that you're not getting enough food, what's it going to do? It's going to now absorb every last calorie of fat and sugar and everything else that you are eating on your keto diet or any other diet. And you're going to hold on to that energy and your metabolism is going to go lower. So what we mean by lower metabolism is body conservation. I want to hold on to all that fat because you're dieting. You're going to need this fat. Our bodies are primed to kind of react like they used to in, evolutionarily speaking, if you had a war, a famine, a drought, something like that, the crop didn't come in one year. Well, what did your body do? Well, we survived today because our body would hold on to energy, lower metabolism, and we would have those reserves. So our bodies look at these diets and exercise and types of, when we do that significantly for a month or two and we lose weight, and then we say we can't live on that forever. And so then we say, okay, let me try being regular again. And what happens inevitably is our metabolism is lower, and now we gain not only all the weight back, but then even more weight back. I think it was a New Yorker did an article, I believe, but correct me if I'm wrong, it's one of those magazines, on The Biggest Loser. That show that they
had where
everybody had to compete to lose weight?
Right.
A year afterwards, every single participant not only gained all their weight back, but more. So that just proves that during that short interval of time they were on the show, they were trying to be good and they were losing weight, but their metabolism and their body was trying to react to that. And then later on, it not only reacted, but it overshot.
You can't keep up with that.
No, you can't keep up with that. That's exactly the point. And your body is fighting you. And that's the point. It's not just the lifestyle and the diet, but it's also the anatomy that's coming into play here with the hormones.
So you were going way back there, like when we first started, we used to hunt and gather and kill for food and our diet, and you're explaining how our diet has changed. But do you think, or do you know, were there overweight people or obese people back then, even though they were eating quote unquote properly?
Yes, you know who they were? They were kings and queens. I'm serious. The royalty back in the day, those were the ones who were morbidly obese with sleep apnea, diabetes.
Right. Oh, that
and
makes sense.
Yeah, I've done a lot of research where they, you know, when they did autopsies on some of these, like, you know, royalty, king, aristocrats, kings, whatever, you know, they saw that they had such a significant amount of fat in all of their organs that they had metabolic syndrome. They had diabetes. They may have not had a word for that or a diagnosis mm-hmm. term for that, but all of those people who were just sitting around and all the serfs and everybody else in society would bring them taxes and grain and all this stuff or whatever, they would consume all of that and they would absolutely have all of those same issues that we're suffering from today. But now, you know, you don't need to be a king or queen anymore to drive up to McDonald's and be handed, you know, 15,000 calories.
Right, in a bag.
Eat it on your way home in a car without even lifting your foot and taking a walk.
Right, well, you lift your foot to press the gas and the brake.
Oh, this
a little bit of exercise there. So
maybe a calorie or two, yeah.
You know, how does the weight loss solutions, and we want to get into those, but that also gets rid of, as you mentioned, diabetes, high blood pressure, you know, other health issues. How does that happen? Like, how does that cause how does the obesity cause these ailments?
Sure. It's just calorie overload. And mm-hmm. so when you have a lot of sugar from carbohydrates, from simple sugars, even, you know, people don't realize bread is also, you know, these carbohydrates you're eating from bread and pizza and all these things, you're not eating raw sugar, table sugar, but it's also a type of sugar. And so all of these, all of this excess calories, and as your body puts on all of this and conserves all of this fat, which is called adipose tissue, what happens is your organs kind of get, you know, wrapped in this fat and they start getting stressed out. And then your insulin levels start getting higher because your body can't keep up with energy stores for all of this fat plus everything on all of your organs. And so it starts to shut down. And that's really what's called, you know, diabetes. You have way too high insulin levels. Your pancreas then that creates all this insulin to help your body function because of all this excess fat that you have on it causes that diabetes, and that leads to, you know, heart attack and strokes and everything else. But in addition to all of that, you know, I mean, just think about someone who's morbidly obese. They also have joint problems. They'll have arthritis because of the girth in their neck. They get obstructive sleep apnea, which also causes mm-hmm. Which also causes right heart failure. But not only that, then you're talking about, you know, gastroesophageal reflux disease, asthma. I mean, it never stops. There are about 16 to 20 ailments just from morbid obesity alone. So losing that excess weight, your body doesn't have to work so hard anymore to maintain all of this excess fat and everything else. And that leads to lower blood pressure, lower insulin levels, getting rid of diabetes. I mean, in Washington, D.C., where I studied a lot of this, we kind of coined the term diabesity because obesity and diabetes just went hand in hand, and that was the ultimate killer. So when you lower the sugar levels and you don't need to eat as much because you don't have all these cravings and you don't have your body telling you need to eat to survive, all of a sudden your insulin levels come down and then everything just gets better. It has been shown many times to be the ultimate cure to diabetes is actually weight loss surgery versus just diet and exercise alone. You have an 82 to 98% resolution of diabetes. High blood pressure, 62 to 70% resolution of high blood pressure. Mm-hmm. Sleep apnea, you know, it's funny because a lot of patients come in and the wife say, Dr. Jawad, you have to get the weight off of my husband because I just cannot sleep at night with all his snoring in that sleep apnea.
Right,
you know,
right.
Or they have a big CPAP machine. And then when I cure that sleep apnea, wait, 82 to 98% resolution, then they complain that I can't sleep without that machine.
I was going to say, there's another complaint coming right around the corner.
You know, the complaints never stop. It doesn't matter what you do. You always lose.
All right. Well, we have something else that I read, and you could tell me if this is true or not. And men, you're going to want to listen up. But we're talking with Dr. Aram Jawad. He's the bariatric, robotic, and general surgeon at JFK University Medical Center in Edison, and they're doing a great job there, and you're a part of it. But I understand that not only does weight loss help with everything else that you have mentioned, but it could help with impotence.
Yes, absolutely. So
that's a big deal.
It is a big deal.
There's got to be a lot of men who, I have high blood pressure, I'll take care of that later, but impotence, I got to take care of that now.
I cannot tell you how many men have came into the office 6 months to a year later, have shaken my hand and said, Doc, I got to tell you, you've done so much for my sex life. I can't believe it.
Wow.
There is a significant, and many studies have shown that there is a significant resolution of erectile dysfunction, and it's really due to the overall decreased inflammation in the body. When you are obese or you're overweight, you have generalized inflammation. I don't want to get too technical, but there's inflammatory markers going in your bloodstream causing just generalized inflammation, like IL-6 and some of these other what they call cytokines. And I've also done a lot of work with, this is just a quick segue into COVID-19, because, you know, a lot of people with COVID also had, did so poorly because they were morbidly obese, because their body had so much inflammation, they couldn't attack COVID. And so, you know, that's just another kind of separate point. But the inflammation in the body, significant resolution of that, significantly, again, decreases the erectile dysfunction. Specific to men as well is the prostate cancer.
Right, right.
So bariatric surgery has a up to 77% reduction in developing hormone-related cancers. So in women, that would be breast and endometrial, and in men, prostate cancer, okay? Because that's one of the biggest issues later on in life. And, you know, you're going to get that quicker if you're morbidly obese. And then urologists have told me that, you know, your risks of complications for prostate surgery or any other type of surgery later in life are significantly higher if you're of a higher weight, from the healing to the procedure itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it really changes the quality of life. I don't think, or I don't know, you tell me, do most men just think losing the weight, I'm losing the weight because I want to be thin, but they don't realize all the other great things that come with it.
Yeah.
With losing weight.
You know, I went into bariatric weight loss surgery for this reason alone, is that I can treat 16 issues or more with one procedure. I don't think there's any other surgeon that can say that. You know, you take a gallbladder out, you take a gallbladder out, you take a appendix out, you know, that's it. That's that one problem that you've cured. But here, I mean, there's a 95% increase in quality of life, whether that be you're getting rid of all your medications. You used to be on 6 medications and now you're on 1 or nothing. But also just the simple things such as running around with grandkids, not huffing and puffing when you're going upstairs or carrying groceries, looking and feeling better, traveling better. I mean, obese people have a lot of discrimination in today's society, from having to use handicapped seats or entryways to get on subways, seatbelt extenders, you know, airplane seats.
Paying for two airplane seats.
You know, everywhere they go, it's like they're discriminated against. So when you lose a significant amount of weight and you're half the self physically you used to be, you realize that life is just so much easier, it's more enjoyable, you know, and you're not in pain all the time. And I think that's really the most, I mean, the number one comment I get from everybody is, Dr. Jawed, why didn't I do this sooner? You know, why was I living in so much pain and with all these medical ailments for the last 5 to 10 years? You know, I should have done this sooner, but I'm glad I did it now.
JFKMC.org/bariatrics is where you can go. And we'll give that out in just a short while once again. But bariatric surgery, it was stigmatized. Like, even though some people may think it should be the last resort, or some people think it's the easy way out, or it's lazy, you know, when speaking of losing weight, it seems to have been somewhat destigmatized in recent years. Tell me if you believe that, and what can that be attributed to?
Yes, absolutely. I think that it still is stigmatized because, unfortunately, a lot of family members think that the patient shouldn't get it. But, you know, patients need to think about themselves. And I think in the recent years, a lot of celebrities have ended up getting significant weight loss, Al Roker being one of them, you know. And I think that kind of opened people's eyes to, oh, my God, this really works. And, you know, what people have to do is not worry about what anybody else thinks. They have to look at their own lives. And how uncomfortable are you? I mean, how long have you been trying to lose this weight? Do you realize year after year after year on Weight Watchers and Jenny Craig and Atkins and Keto and Paleo and intermittent fasting that these things just aren't working for you, and that there's an issue with your metabolism and your hormones? I mean, you know, you have to take the blame away. You have to separate yourself from that blame. A lot of patients do come in, and I feel bad for them because they feel like I'm a failure. No, you're not a failure. You know, your body is failing you, and we are here. I'm here to help you fix your body so that you can adapt to the lifestyle that we're living today, and so your body can work with you with the weight loss, not against you.
Talking with Dr. Aram Jawed, bariatric, robotic, and general surgeon at JFK University Medical Center in Edison. Al Roker was a good example because we see him. We see him every day, if we choose to, and we see that he has kept the weight off. So that is a great advertisement for get it done if you were the similar size of Al. What is obese? I mean, I know it's different because of height and weight and things like that, but how does one know if they're obese?
Yeah, so what you would do is it's a simple calculation. You can Google it or you can get an app on your phone, but it's body mass index. So you have to look up a body mass index calculator. You plug in your height, you plug in your weight, not a calculation you can just do in your head.
It's different for everyone.
And then it spits out a number. So obesity is anything with a body mass index or a BMI of 30 and above. Okay. Weight loss surgery comes into play with insurance companies covering and everything else with a body mass index of 35 and above. So 5 points over just being obese. And then at 40, you're getting into this morbid obesity category where, you know, it's no longer just clinically significant, but you're going to get some. You're going to get diabetes. You're going to get high blood pressure. You're going to get sleep apnea. And you're going to have very high orthopedic risks where you're going to need surgery on your hips and your joints and things like that. So again, BMI of 30 is obesity. BMI of 35 and above, you're qualifying for some weight loss procedure. BMI of 40 and above, you're morbidly obese. And it's going to be extremely hard at that weight to lose a significant amount of weight and keep it off without an intervention.
So it is covered by insurance.
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah, that's great.
And we work with the insurance. We have, you know, insurance specialists that will look up every patient's insurance specific plan that, you know, is very tailored personally to their situation and their deductibles and everything
okay.
else. So we have all of that.
So if I come in for the procedure, I believe it's safe. I think you believe it's safe. I think it's proven to be safe, but there have to be some risks. What are some of the risks that you've experienced?
So before we talk about risk, which I will, I just want to say that what you have to look at is what is my risk of living with this obesity and all the medical problems.
Good point.
Versus my risk of getting a very, very low risk bariatric surgery. So bariatric procedures are actually lower risk than most general surgery. And the overall risk of something significant, like leakage from, you know, where we kind of manipulate the anatomy or infection or things like that. We're talking about less than 0.5% nationwide. So less than 0.5%. And then our practice, since we are a bariatric surgery center of excellence, we have to maintain a much higher standard than the national average. So ours is actually, in our practice, we found ours is 0.5% of the national average. So now we're talking about 0.25%. Versus very, very high risk of living with the obesity and all the medical problems that come with it.
Well, so 0.25%, that's the risk involved in getting this done. And all the benefits, obviously, we've spoken of already.
Yeah.
Someone comes in and says, I want to have this surgery. What's your conversation? Let's start there. And then once they have the surgery, and then after the surgery, how long are you monitoring them?
So we would look at, obviously, the patient's body mass index, how high that is. What medications are they on for what medical problems, and what procedure they would like to have. Now, the three most popular procedures in the United States right now, from the least to the most popular, the least is the lap band, the second one is the gastric bypass, and the most popular right now is the laparoscopic sleeve, vertical sleeve gastrectomy is what it's called.
Okay.
Based on the comorbid conditions, meaning diabetes, say somebody was extremely high risk and had very high diabetes and wanted to get rid of their diabetes, then maybe we would say, you know, gastric bypass was a better procedure for them. If somebody was a much lower BMI with not many comorbidities and didn't have to lose a significant amount of weight and had, you know, had other family members that had a lap band and wanted a lap band, maybe we'd go that way. If they wanted a hormonal procedure or they needed a hormonal procedure, then probably the vertical sleeve gastrectomy. So it's tailored to every individual.
Okay.
It's not a one-fits-all kind of a situation.
And how long after the surgery are they under your care?
So usually if we do the procedure, say on a Monday or Tuesday, I'd say at least take the rest of the week off of work. You can start work the next week. We like to at least touch base with the patients within 2 weeks to make sure everything's going fine. They're getting things down, you know, they're meeting all the requirements. And then we like to see patients at 1 month and then 3 months and 6 months with blood work, and then yearly. And we like to keep the relationship going because we want to make sure that these patients are keeping the weight off. We have support groups every month that have been virtual because of the pandemic. We do a lot of activities with our patients. So we try to keep them engaged and we try to keep that weight off forever. I mean, we never really say goodbye to a patient unless they move, you know? And I think that's really the way it should be. Other practices, I know they do the procedure and then the patient's lost to follow up and never shows up. And then, you know, 4 or 5 years later, you know, they're not in a situation they would have been in if they continued the regular follow-ups and the support groups and everything else.
Yeah, I know people who that's happened to. So before we go, one more question. You mentioned how, you know, evolution has, you know, created that we have larger stomachs and, you know, our anatomy has to adapt to the modern day lifestyle. I wish there was a book about this somewhere. Do you know where there could be one or in the future there could be a book about this?
It's funny you say that because I am writing a book right
now. I know.
I
wanted to talk about your book before we call it a day, but go ahead.
Sure, yes. So I am writing a book about this. I studied biological anthropology, which is the study of evolution and man as it pertains to society at GW University in Washington, D.C. with the Smithsonian. And it was an incredible journey for me. But I have come to realize that, and it really kind of goes hand in hand with what I'm doing here. Because again, you know, to recap, I really firmly believe that our biology is completely outdated for the society that we're living in today. And if you go back and you look at the history, and we've already touched upon this, but our digestive system, you know, some would say are 30 to 50,000 years old. If you ask an evolutionist, they would say that we are living with way, like five times larger of a stomach than we actually need, way too long of intestines with way too high absorptive capacity than what we actually need in today's society. And that's really setting us back. You know, I look at this portion of the stomach that, you know, we operate on, or the portion of the intestines that we adjust, as updating your body to the society that we live in today, because we're no longer outdoors working for our food physically. We're no longer in the fields. Nobody is, you know, burning tens of thousands of calories a day and eating low calorie food. And our bodies want that. Our bodies are craving that kind of a lifestyle. And that's why if you transplant somebody from, you know, New Jersey, you know, Edison area to a farm in Nebraska, in 5 years, I'll guarantee that patient will lose all their weight. But then if you transplant them back into our society here, you know, they will blow up again. And it has nothing to do with them or their habits or their control or the fact that they are gouging themselves. It has to do with the fact that their hormones and their body are conducive to a way of life that we've been living for 30 to 50,000 years. And nothing has really updated in that sense. I mean, we no longer need appendixes anymore. We no longer need gallbladders. I mean, these things have, you know, you get gallstones, you get liver disease, you can die. You get a burst appendix, you can die. Well, on the same token, this portion of the stomach, some of the portions of the stomach that allow us to eat 1.5 liters of food, that have the hunger hormones and everything, they're only killing us as well. So I really look at what we do as updating the body and the anatomy to the society that we live in today. And if you look at it from a Darwinian standpoint or an evolutionary standpoint, traits in society are adapted to the society because they are better for the way that you live. So people that are being born today with, say, smaller stomachs, higher metabolism and everything else, they won't have the same problems as other people that have lower metabolism, bigger stomachs and everything else. And, you know, they'll survive longer. They'll mate with people. I mean, I have actually treated infertility in many women. We're doing a progressive case study right now on a woman who was infertile, who's now lost a significant amount of weight, no longer has polycystic ovarian syndrome, and is now getting pregnant. If you can't even breed with people who are morbidly obese, then eventually down the line, thousands of years later, the society is going to select out people with bigger stomachs, more robust digestive systems, and higher and lower metabolism. If you look at it, you know, we're just kind of update that because you don't have that long to live to wait for that to happen.
Understood.
If that makes any sense.
We are out of time, but for more information, go to jfkmc.org/bariatrics or call 732-744-5955. I'm Joel Katz. Thanks for joining us once again for JFK Spotlight on Health, brought to you by Hackensack Meridian Health, JFK University Medical Center. Keep getting better. Thanks again to our guest, Dr. Aram Jawad, bariatric, robotic, and general surgeon at JFK University Medical Center in Edison.
Thank you so much. It was my pleasure.